You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, and we've got a really special episode tonight that I'm super psyched about. We are here with Features Editor and more. What's happening? No, I'm Features Editor, and more is just the General Editor. General Editor and more. What's happening? How are you?
Yes, General Editor. I make sure I'm in charge of everything. What is going on? Lots of stuff. Lots of really exciting stuff. And you just turned green, and I don't know why.
Well, aside from me turning green, we're also here with, I got to say, one of the most impressive, most important people in American music for the past 40 years or so. He just put out a new album, well, and his band put out a new album. They just played Punk Rock Bowling, and I saw them, and it was awesome. They just did a USA tour, but they skipped Philadelphia, but that's all right, because I got to see him in Las Vegas anyways. And they just put out a brand new album that's self-titled, and it's friggin' awesome. It's Steve McDonald of Red Cross. Steve, thanks for coming on the podcast, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. And that introduction was very, very kind.
See, and we're going to jump in. We're going to play a song, but we're going to jump into all that. And I want you to think about this. Steve always downplays himself. He's like, that was so generous of you to say so. I would say it was not generous of you. I would say it was the exact right of complimentary, because Steve is an amazing musician. He's achieved so much, and he's still doing his thing and still kicking ass, as I saw firsthand in Las Vegas. But let's play a song. Let's play one of the singles from the brand new Red Cross album, which is called Red Cross, and it's off In the Red Records. And this is I'll Take Your Word For It.
Does it always go that we reap what we sow? Are you my friend? Are you my foe? I don't know. 'Cause every time you're around, I end up on the ground. From words designed to take me down. You don't need to show me, but I don't need the hit. I'll take your word for it.
And everything, but very first off, the listeners can't see, but I'm holding up a copy of, oh, actually, you can't see that too good. Let me turn off my blurred video here. a copy of Sergeant Pepper. However, Steve, what's special about this copy of Sergeant Pepper?
Wow, it's clear red vinyl.
And does that hold a significance to you, the clear red version of Sergeant Pepper?
It does. Yeah. Did I tell you this or something? Or
you didn't tell? No. Well, why don't you tell the listeners the special, not just any Sergeant Pepper, the clear red, I believe, is 1978 Japanese press, right around there.
Well, that's okay. That version's a little different, but it's still amazing that it's on clear red. I don't know how that works, but we had, okay. So growing up, my brother and I, Jeff McDonald, we shared a record collection, and a record that was always in the collection since I was conscious was, of course, Sergeant Pepper's. I had an uncle that was in school in Japan in the 60s. He went to university in Japan. And he would bring us back fun things. And he brought us back. I don't even remember it. It must have happened before I was conscious because I was born in 67. But he brought back a Japanese print of Sgt. Pepper's, and it was on clear red vinyl. And then fast forward many, many years, whatever, I guess 50-something years, the new Red Cross record, I requested that it was printed on clear red vinyl because it reminded me of our version of Sgt. Pepper's. But now ours was a little different than that one because it was on, that was actually on Apple, the one you just showed me, John,
yes.
In person. Ours was on Paramount Records. My brother thinks it was a Chinese bootleg, which is possible. I don't know enough about rare records, but I guess there might have been like a Chinese bootleg circuit in the 60s, or this might have been the early 70s. But at any rate, yes, clear red always makes me, and now colored vinyl is so popular and common now, but something about clear red is a sense memory, fond memory. And since our record, the new record, we call it, it's sort of unofficially known as the Red Album. I spell that R-E-D-D like our band. And it's on in the Red Records, which they even renamed they spelled their name differently on our record, or just on the OB strip. They wrote it in the Red, R-E-D-D. Any rate, so it's on clear red vinyl, R-E-D-D vinyl. I'm trying to get everyone to learn how to spell our name correctly. That's my mission nowadays. I don't know why. It's still dry. It's ridiculous. When we had to change our band spelling, and maybe I'm jumping ahead here or something, I don't know, but we had to change our band name in like 1982 because the American Red Cross were concerned there would be some confusion. And they said, you know, you guys could change just the spelling. Even they suggested REDKROSS. And that was really nice of them. They were very friendly about the whole thing. But my brother, the marketing genius, my brother is insisted that we not only add the K or change it to a K, he wanted to add a second D to the word red. And when I said, that seems, and I was like 15 at the time, I said, that seems odd. Why? And he said, because it looks like Red Fox, duh. And the comedian from the 70s and earlier. And at any rate, ever since then, it's been destined that our name gets spelled correctly maybe 50% of the time, which is fine. It's neat that anybody knows our band at all, but or much less spells it wrong or right or spells it at all. But when I see it, REDKROSS, I always feel a little bit like, oh yeah, we failed.
Well, Steve's response actually like springs open like four or five questions. I'm going to try to run them down the line. First of all, I'll point out that isn't an interesting. Well, what's it like being a 15-year-old and getting a cease and desist from a multinational corporation?
Well, yeah, that was interesting. They reached out to me in my high school. Some people have recently told me they thought that was not real and that maybe that was a joke, or I don't know. Who knows? It happened to another band called Salvation Army at the same time. We both played a show that was promoted or organized by the city of Torrance, California. It was at a park. And so I believe it's real. I think that they made a flyer. It's a very uneventful flyer. Just list all the band names and some of the band, like Minutemen were on there. That's a notable group. And Some of your listeners might know. And then the Salvation Army were on there, Red Cross. I forget, there were a few other local bands. And at any rate, I believe that one of the organizers reached out to both the Salvation Army organization and the American Red Cross organization afterwards, just to tell them, oh, there's some, young musicians that have been working under the same name as your organization. I don't think it was anything in particularly nasty about it, but at any rate, yeah, it wasn't like a threatening, it wasn't like we're gonna sue you or, but it was weird. Yeah, I was in a big public high school and I got this, I've in my memory, it was like I was told to go to the principal's office that there was a letter waiting for me or something. And I mean, I'm sure I was afraid that I had broken some rule and maybe I was, paranoid about the principal or something. But no, I was tough. I was super punk about it. Hey, what's up? No, but at any rate, yeah. And then I got this letter, and that's my memory of it. I'm sure I, the whole thing was probably in somewhat, terrifying or something. I might have thought I had done something horrible, or I don't know. But looking back at it, I think it was actually quite civil and nice and friendly. And yeah, what could we expect? And we were playing with, well, I guess we could also, yeah, we would have taken a very defensive stance, I suppose, because we named ourselves Red Cross around the same time that we were playing shows with another band that had a similar kind of situation, Black Flag, who were, they were, there was also a very popular, Roach and or it still exists, Roach and ant repellent, bug spray called Black Flag. So and I don't really know how cop I still don't know how copyright works, even in the internet age, which I really should know more now, but plus I'm old enough to know. But I think at the time I was just really paranoid that someone was going to take our identity away from us, and then the man was going to tell us what to do. At the time, I didn't really know what the American Red Cross. I didn't know they're like they're really good people. They help people. Yeah, but I was like, oh, the man. Oh, they're going to tell us what to do, and whatever. So I'm sorry, that was a long, involved answer.
Last time I interviewed Steve was for Melvin's article, and after Steve gives all these wonderful answers, and he's like, "Oh, I'm sorry, that was so long." Meanwhile, he's giving me like absolute gold. Like in my Melvin's interview, he referred to both himself and Buzz Osborne as emotional alley cats, which is one of the most beautiful phrases I've ever heard ever. But the cool thing about Steve is not only has Red Cross walked the dangerous waters of trademark infringement, he's been in two other bands that have walked the dangerous line of trademark infringement. Number one, the Melvins with Lysol, who had a much less friendly response to trademark. And he was also in Off, who, of course, that's a little iffy, the name Off, with regard to the Off bug spray,
Yeah, it was another bug spray band. Yeah, and it's funny. Yeah, I was in the second bug spray band, and I played my first show with the first bug spray band. And yeah, it's so funny. But yeah, right. And then Off really kind of looked into it earlier. We kind of took care of. They nipped it in the bud early, and I don't know. They had a lawyer or something. I don't know how they worked all. Oh, but and then Lysol. Yeah, I've heard that story, but I kind of forget what happened with Lysol. I think they I don't think I don't think it says the name of the record anywhere on it. Or they had an album called Lysol and a song called Lysol, or they have. And but I don't remember what Buzz must have told me once before. I don't remember how the man came down on the Melvins about that.
And we're going to talk about the Melvins a little bit later on, because
Okay.
everything Steve says, if the listeners want to know with regard to Melvins Lysol, is Melvins had an album called Lysol. They didn't even
Yes.
realize that it was a trademark. They thought it was a generic product name. So
Right.
Lysol, the
Like
company,
Kleenex, like tissue as opposed to
right.
Kleenex.
So Lysol, the company, claimed that they had an undercover. Not undercover, what do you call that? A private detective pretend to be a magazine interviewer and
Oh, yeah.
interview the band after the record was printed up. And then after he confirmed that there was indeed a record slated to be released called Lysol, they then sent a cease and desist to the Melvins. And Buzz's response was, "You could have told us just before we printed it up that we would have changed it." So the Melvins put black tape over top of every single record. And so if you get the original Lysol that has black tape over it, that's a valuable collector's item. But we're not talking about the Melvins right now. First of all, we're talking about the Melvins. I mean, Red Cross's brand new album, Red Cross, which circles back to their history. I love the new Red Cross record. It's a double LP. It's red vinyl, red jacket in homage to the Beatles' White Album, of course. And to me, and Steve, I'm interested in your opinion of the record. To me, it's not a reflection of what Red Cross has been. To me, it's kind of Red Cross in our final, most polished. It's the form that Red Cross had always wanted to be and was always kind of drifting towards, maybe a little bit away and then back towards. To me, it is the epitome and the most polished and the most diamond version of Red Cross. It's fantastic. What does the new Red Cross record represent to you? Is it a look back? Is it the next step? What is it to you?
Well, you just kind of covered it. I think that, thank you, John. It's very nice what you've just said. Yeah, I kind of do feel like it's the most satisfying listen of our records for me. It is more what I've always tried to, it's what I've hoped for our records. And yeah, I mean, sure, lyrically, there's some reflections, and it's my brother and I writing lyrics together, and we've had so many shared experiences, and it's hard not to get, it's fun to dig into them. And it's not just sentimentality, it's not just kind of like, there's nothing. I don't know if the word maudlin, it gets attached to sentimentality. There's nothing, it's joyous in its sentimentality, but it's not negative about now. It's still looking for, it's looking ahead, you know? I've been very, it's weird about Red Cross. Like, we've never had mainstream success. We don't have that one hit song that got played a bunch in 1996, and now you go play wineries or something or county fair. I mean, nothing wrong with that, and that's great if bands can do that, and it's probably good money. But we're always kind of hopefuls instead. Instead, we're always kind of bubbling under and going for it or something or whatever. I allow myself to take a chance with my heart, I suppose. You could at some point it could be foolish to like grow. Still trying to grow your audience, but I don't know. Whatever. I am forever like in that place of, dreaming. Maybe it's because I'm from Los Angeles. I grew up like all these billboards everywhere and stuff, and the Hollywood sign on the hill, although it was 15 miles away from me. I might have stars in my eyes just in my DNA because of certain things I've inherited. I don't know, but or maybe I'm just a, always underachieving or something, and it fits because it keeps me hungry. And sometimes it comes, things like our new record come to fruition because of these phenomena, what have you. But yeah, that's not the end of this. If I have my way, it's not the end of the story. And yes, it is looking forward. It's about moving forward. It's not resting on our laurels. It's not just talking about the good times. It's not about, oh, when I was 18, I was a quarterback, and what happened to life, and now I'm just drinking two six packs on my couch and angry at the world. It's not a, you know what I mean? I'm hungry and happy, and I want to keep seeing what I can do and seeing what's possible. And I think if anything, the only thing that's a surprise to me is how slow the growth is. It's incremental. Oh, it inches along, but I think it does keep growing. And like what I'm capable of, or what we're capable of as a band, and but I've been writing more. I'm happy about that.
You mentioned about like the guy that like sits on his couch and talks about what happened, you know, however many years ago. People love to ask you, it's like, what was it like being in a bar when you were 14? What was it like being the younger brothers of Black Flag and stuff? Which honestly, I love those stories, and you always answer those stories with grace and whatnot. But I always wonder, is that like, you know, at my age, if someone comes up to me like, "Hey, remember that awesome thing that happened in middle school?" It's like, "Well, yeah, I mean, it was middle school. You know what I mean? Like, is that what it feels like to you, or is it like, yes, I was an OG hardcore punker and I will always be that? You know what I mean? Like, how does that feel to you when people ask you about those early days? So, how does that feel? What does that feel like?"
Yeah, it's not bad. It's not bad. I don't feel like I'm always able to satisfy people's curiosity. You know, a lot of stuff happened when I was so young. I was 12 when we played our first shows, and I think nowadays doesn't like the some kind of, board of neurological sciences say that the human brain isn't even fully developed till you're 25 or something. Don't make any important decisions about your life till you're 25, unlike I that made a career decision about the rest of my life at 11. But pretty much, as it turns out. But yeah, so a lot of things I'm kind of like, I'll remember the best I can. I don't always know if I'm able to give a very satisfying answer. But I mean, it's not frustrating. The only thing that's ever weird and frustrating is when I'm like, when you've been. Yeah, nothing is. Not, it's all good. And I mean, maybe it depends on what day you hit me on and whatever. But those are neat stories. I'm very lucky that the world I landed in, would happen to be something that people talk about and they're excited about. A lot of neat things were happening in the environment that we came up in, and I can't take any credit for that. Other than the fact that my brother and I were really tenacious and very ambitious, just in terms of like wanting to be a part of something that we were excited about. And we, people might think, oh, you're from Los Angeles. Of course, you open for Black Flag. It's like, not really. There's like, I think there's as many people in Los Angeles County as there are in the entire country of Australia. And yeah, something like that, or something closer, Southern California. And that's especially, well, we don't need to go into a big digression, but in case you're checking that online right now, I don't want to be totally off. But so, and then pre-internet as well. So to find anything that you were interested in, it was quite a scavenger hunt. And but we definitely, when we found things that we were interested in, we didn't chicken out. It might have scared us to like, interact with people twice our age, or as much as we wanted to get on stage and perform and express ourselves, it's intimidating. And I still hate public speaking. And so, it was like that, that same feeling. And, even though, as you can see, I can clearly ramble, but giving a composed, well-organized talk in front of a bunch of strangers is, I think, for most people, one of their worst nightmares. And yeah, so we did these things regardless if we were afraid or not, and I am proud of that. And but the fact that it turned out to be the birthplace of Southern California hardcore, I can't take any credit for that. I just happened to be there and we got to play a small part in it, and that's really neat. And yeah, I'm wise enough to know that that's look, it could have been something of no note, or it could have been something that some people are embarrassed of or something, I don't know. But yeah, so it's not a problem. I think the only thing that for me ever is yeah, I mean, speaking to you guys is great. Like, you're talking about my records, you know about my records. It's not like Red Cross, what's your, like, where'd you get the name? Or maybe that's your next question. That's fine too. Sometimes they're just really generic questions that you could be asking anybody. And, I don't know. I guess that can get tiring if you're on a long press junket or something. But at this point in the game, it's like the fact that I get to do it at all, it's hard to face me and to annoy me.
Well, Steve actually walked right into my next question. I do like Steve saying, well, we were tenacious. It's not like anybody got to open for Black Flag or whatever. And Steve has accomplished so much. I mean, he started Red Cross. They've put out, well, like 13 or 14 albums at this point. The newest one is absolutely fantastic. He's been in Sparks. He's played with Beck. He's in the friggin' Melvins right now. He was in Off. Steve has accomplished a ton. And Em's tired of hearing me ask this question, but like, Black Dahlia of the Dwarfs is like, I'm the greatest, and he's the greatest. James Brown are like, I'm the greatest, and he's the greatest. KRS-One says, I'm the best MC ever, and he is. Even the Beastie Boys, they're not cocky, but they're confident. You know, they know they're the Beastie Boys. I have very trouble hard I have a hard time believing that Steve, you could accomplish as much as you have to the high level of skill that you have without deep down. And I appreciate that, like, oh, you're being generous, or we just happen to be the right. But I have a that deep down, you don't believe that you are like top ranking and that you have the ability to do amazing things. Do you feel that? I feel like you're always self-negating yourself, but I feel like deep down you have to have that at your core. Buzz Osborne has that at his core. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, the ego is a tricky place, you know. And we all have one, you know. And of course I could say, don't you know who I think I am? But I think the thing about the ego is like, you know, it's like look at for I mean I predate these people, but I'm the same age, but I think of all the lead singers of the grunge era. You know, they were all my age. I was the same age as Kurt Cobain. I think he was a month older than me. Chris Cornell, Scott Weiland. The ego is a dangerous place, and it's something to be kept in check. And I want to be a happy person. It doesn't mean that I'm completely like a shell of a lack of confidence. I just want to keep things in check and keep moving forward, keep my head down, do my work best I can, you know? And it seems like that seems to be a good recipe for dealing with the ups and downs of life in showbiz, so to speak. You know, because there are times when you get the approval of hundreds or thousands of people all at once, and that's a terrific feeling. But if your well-being depends on that, you're in trouble because you're not going to get that every day. And then sometimes you're going to get a lot of disapproval. And I think that's connected with the artist ego and the company, you know, and the It, and I don't exactly know. It's tricky business, like I said. I don't have it all worked out. But, you know, yes, Buzz is a confident person. He is one of the most productive people I've ever met in my life. He's really good at doing what he does. But I also know that, you know, he is a sensitive person too. You know, and I think that these things go hand in hand. I mean, that's also part of, you know, people who are attracted to being creative on some level. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to try to generalize or get it all wrong, but I mean, maybe that's one of the reasons why they're attracted, because they're sensitive and they are feeling this stuff and they want to express it, or they're observing the world through a very sensitive lens or something. It's something that drives them to want to communicate on that level. And so it's a weird thing, because it maybe we're all the more than any people, we shouldn't be doing this because, like I said, there's lots of ups and downs. And if you believe the praise and adulation, then you are also vulnerable to, you know, taking in what the trolls have to say too. And I'm not saying you should just put your blinders on and live in your own world. I think you should just, for me, what I try to do, and I'm not always so good at it, is just try to keep my feet on the ground and be grateful that I get to do this and lean into gratitude. And but of course, yes, there are times when I'm not so good at it.
Steve, the poet of interview subjects, always with these wonderful, multifaceted, thought out answers. Well, we're already half hour in. Steve's an awesome guy in the interview. Red Cross is awesome. We're going to play some songs. There's a whole bunch I want to talk to him about. We're not going to get it all, but I want to talk about some more than the brand new album, working with his brother. I want to talk about Melvin's just a little bit. I want to talk about Bootlegs just a little bit. So we're going to play a song for off the new album. It's out now off Indie Red Records. The album's called Red Cross, double LP. Super well done. The record itself is awesome, but like the packaging and the whole thing, it's like perfect. It's perfect. So we're gonna play Candy Color Catastrophe. We're gonna come back. Em's gonna interview Steve a little bit, and then I'm gonna hit him with some random questions and a few more questions about the brand new album, which is excellent. So this is Candy Color Catastrophe, and we'll be right back.
1, 2, 3.
Melted velvet colors tell you tales. Starry-eyed but blind, your canvas fails. In your mind, no one knows at all. Who decides?
We're back. Em, hit Steve with some questions.
All right. So it was kind of good because this goes back to what you were just kind of talking about. Like, how do you keep your ego in check, and how do you like stay grounded? And if you feel yourself kind of like floating up, how do you kind of come back down?
Well, floating up, you mean like when I'm start saying things like, "Don't you know who I think I am?"
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, well, one surefire way is that I have a nice home life. I have I have a wife and a son who they like me. They love me even, but they're not my number one fans. And there I'm just dad or Steve, and I got to do the dishes, I got to take out the trash. And some, you know what I mean? So it's, and then I
Yeah.
have my bandmates. I once saw an interview with George Harrison talking about he was working with Madonna around 1988, and he was working as a film producer. And he was working at this company called Handmade Films, and they were doing a big movie starring Madonna and Sean Penn in 1988, the biggest stars in the world at the time. Shanghai Surprise. You probably don't know that film. Because
No.
it was a huge disaster.
Oh
And
no.
George was interviewed, and he was at the time, he gave a very candid interview, and he was saying what a pain in the ass Madonna was. And he said the reason she was a pain, he said, because I understand what she's going through right now. I understand all that adulation and that fame and that craziness, and everyone's telling you you're great and all that stuff. The lucky thing I had with my band was that if any one of us, of the four of us, the Beatles he was talking about, started believing something that people were telling them, the other three would knock them down to size. If
Oh, sure.
Paul was getting too big for his britches, then John and George would tag team or whatever. And he thought it was a really good fortunate thing. It kept them all down to earth, and she didn't have that. And it was a real pain in the neck for George to work with her at the time. It was also Sean's fault. Anyways, that's a big digression. But I just think that that is a natural thing, like and I ridiculous I'm comparing myself to these famous people. It's not like that for me. But and also when I get, as I call it, recognized, on the street or at a record shop or something, it's always a nice experience. It's someone who knows something about my band. They probably have things in common with me, and it's a nice little chat. And so it's not like, what it must be like for Kim Kardashian to walk across the street and everybody trying to do selfies with her. I don't have that experience. And who was the girl? I just saw a thing online. She
Oh,
Olivia
Chapel
Rodrigo.
Room.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and she was really going off about this stuff. And I did think, like, who's advising her? She doesn't look great right now, but I understood where she was coming from. She needed to write it down and then distill it and then put it in terms that were are relatable to everybody, because I can imagine her experience is crazy. I can totally imagine it. But most people do just sort of think like, hey, you signed up for that. So when I want my selfie with you, you signed up for it. And I don't know about people feeling entitled, whatever. Anyways, so long story short, I don't have to deal with that sort of weird world of, I guess you call it punishing or punishers. Everyone's a punisher to
Yeah.
Rome. And I'm luckily I can just turn around and punish them. So how what's going on with you today? Oh yeah, what's with that those shoes? Where did you get those? Or whatever. So I'm sorry, was that the entire question that you asked?
100%. That was a, yeah, like again, great answer. And then going back to another thing you said a little bit earlier too, like you talked about writing the songs and having these like joyous sentimentality to them. Like what song had the most joy to write off of this album?
Oh, for me,
Yeah.
thanks for asking. I have never, my brother was always the predominant songwriter of our band, and it's a relatively new thing that I'm finishing songs on my own. I've always collaborated with others, but to actually finish a song is, it's the next level. It's ridiculous. Yeah, once again, like I was an early starter and I'm a very late bloomer. And, because I would love to be more of a songwriter. And yeah, for me on the new record, I wrote this song called The Main Attraction that is meaningful because, well, A, my brother and I sing it as sort of like a duet, and then we sing in harmony for the majority of the song. And it's really how I hoped it turned out the way I hoped it could. It exceeded my expectations. And then the part about just writing it, it kind of all came at once. And I get embarrassed talking in those terms, like it came to me. Like it seems sort of, I don't want it to be pretentious, but that's the way my idols talk about what they do. And, and that you can't take all that much credit for it because it kind of does feel like it comes from somewhere else. If you can free yourself up enough to let it to channel it, don't hold that against me. So, and that song came that way. It kind of came fully formed, not the lyrics entirely, but all the chords and the melodies. And I just had this thought in my mind. I knew a friend that really needed their spirits lifted, and these chords and melodies came to me that I feel like achieve that. They, when I listen to it, it has that effect of lifting and emotionally lifting. And then luckily I lucked into some lyrics as well, and that kind of just express something really simple but positive, and they're a good match for the music. And I don't know. So that one I'm happy with it. I don't know if we'll ever be able to play it live. It lifts so much that I sing kind of out of my range, and maybe I could sing it on the first part of the tour, but I probably would lose those notes before, because you have to singing every night, you start to it's hard on the throat. But hopefully we'll be able to play it live sometime, but we haven't been.
You'll get what, like at least a couple good live renditions in at
I
some
would love
point.
to. Yeah, hopefully. That's something to aspire to. It takes a lot of breath.
Yeah. lung training or
Yeah,
whatever, like the
capacity.
expansion.
Yeah, that's a lot of practice. Do you sing? Do you play?
I play bass,
Oh,
and
cool.
yeah, so it's actually like sitting beside me, which is funny, but
We're
yeah.
bass player too. Yeah, cool.
Yes. It is the best instrument, and anyone who says otherwise is lying.
Steve, you mentioned that it's like new for you to finish a song on your own. In an interview, I think it was with ABC, I think, you talked about how you and your brother work Lennon McCartney style, kind of like working against each, not against, with each other. What there's this fascination with brother bands. The Amoebics brothers hate each other. The Kinks brothers hate each other. The way a Oasis brothers hate each other. Mick Jagger is annoyed by his brother, Chris Jagger. How come you and your brother get along so well, and how come you guys don't hate each other? What's the secret technique?
I don't know. I think maybe fame and success is the final straw that breaks the back, perhaps. So I don't want to speak to, I don't want to claim that I have it all worked out. But yeah, I will say that, but we're not, I can't say that we're managed to escape all of those cliches. We have our times, Every band is somewhat, I think, somewhat of a dysfunctional family is the term that resonates for me. And it's bands are hard. They're just so hard. And then you add, because think about it, really. I mean, especially rock bands, it's like most of these people gravitate to this community, this world, because they don't want to do what everybody else is doing, all that lame school stuff or work stuff, and you got to get up early, and you gravitate towards what you think is going to be the life of a rock star. It sounds easy. Everyone's catering to you. And then those four people that gravitate towards that lifestyle are all saddled with shared responsibilities. So you have people that are reluctant about responsibilities, period. And now they have to share responsibilities. And that requires a lot of cooperation, requires really good communication. And most of us musicians, don't necessarily excel in those departments. So bands are complicated. And then add the history of sibling dynamic, and you throw that into that mix. And I get why it's really complicated, and why Ray and Davies of the Kinks, perhaps, for instance, at this point, just kind of say things like, "Oh, we're very different people." And it's like sort of this like that's probably like where they've arrived at why they can't tolerate one another is that I just can't change that person and I can't adjust my attitude enough to the way that person is to tolerate it. Because let's face it, when it comes down to it, when you deal with our interactions with others, we really can't ever control the other person. As much as I'd love to control the other person, I'd love to control the other. All I really can do is change my reaction to them at best. And so it's tricky. But Jeff and I, we're on a good roll right now. I hope that we continue to function at the level that we are. I think of our recent prolific bout on our new record is somewhat proof of our functionality that, because if you're dysfunctional, what does that mean? It means you don't, it doesn't function. You can't produce anything. It doesn't work. And when a band is, but yes, we did produce something. We produced 18 songs and made a double record out of and even cobbled together four videos, although it nearly killed me. But I can't say that we're the poster children of sibling perfection at all.
Oh, fair enough. This is really kind of unrelated. The early Red Cross stuff, there's tons of bootlegs and gray market stuff like floating around. Does that bum you out, or are you like, if the fans want it, that's fine with me? What's your stance on bootlegs and, bootlegs of your stuff in particular,
Oh, well, I mean, whatever. I'm probably torn between being flattered and ripped off. I'm flattered and ripped off at the same time.
Well said. I guess also unrelated is Off recently played their final show. It was in LA, and I'm like, oh, I wonder if Steve's going to show up. But then I saw Red Cross was on tour during that show, so you physically couldn't show up. Did you have any feelings as tour? I mean, you left Off after the third record, but looking back now that Off is completed, are you happy? Are you sad? You say, wow, we really did some cool stuff. Or do you feel like they should have continued? What's your opinion on the end of Off, and what did that signify to you?
Oh, well, I mean, I just always think that when bands like say, this is the final, I always like, yeah, right. And I wonder, will I get the call when they reunite, But yeah, the thing with Off was it sadly, and it's funny because I speak in such like therapized terms, but it ended poorly, and I'm very sad. My relationship with them, not about them breaking up now. When I left the band, it happened in a way that I would have never chosen, and I just felt bad that it happened in a way I would have never chosen with people I had known since I was with a person that I had known since I was 11 years old, and I just thought, geez, aren't we like mature enough now to like keep it cooler than that, and I'm sure I played a part in it, but I know I worked as humanly hard as I possibly could to make sure that I did whatever I could to make things good. And it seemed like they chose to, like, just, I don't know, like they were really mad at me for some reason and acted on it. And I felt like all I did was I made a Red Cross record, I've been in this band forever, like I have the right to do that. And but at any rate, but that was a while ago now, and I hear that Keith loves the new Red Cross record. It's a drag that I'm not hearing that from him directly. We really should be closer. And during COVID, I reached out when I heard that he was had COVID to make sure he was okay, because he is a diabetic, and I worry about him. But the truth of the matter is, if I had been in town for their last show, I don't know if I would have went, which just sucks. Totally sucks, because I don't like that feeling. But you are reminding me. I owe him. I'm gonna solicit coffee with Keith soon, and hopefully him and I can catch up with one another, because it's really ludicrous that we wouldn't be as up to date with each other as we should be. And I know that they completed their movie, and I will say kudos to them for that. And then the other thing I'd say is that I have a hard drive full of a uncompleted off album that I was working on with them. That's one for when you're speaking about the bootlegs and everything. If that ever, I mean, I shouldn't say it, because if it ever ends up on bootleg racks, that wasn't my doing, because it's not my style. But hopefully that record will see the because it was cool. But I mean, I think they ended up using one of those songs on the record they did after my departure. But that version of what we were working on, that was really, really cool.
Well, I love Keith. I love Steve. I think they'll be able to work it out. I
I
know they
think so
will.
too.
There's that quote. I don't even know who said it. Tragedy isn't right verse wrong. It's right verse right. And I'm thinking maybe that's the situation here. And that means they'll be able to work it out. But on happier notes, Dale Crover is now a Red Cross guy. Sadly, he wasn't on the record because his back was kind of hurt, but he's okay now. What's it like playing with Dale Crover live? I mean, you've played with Dale in the Melvins. What's it like playing with Dale in Red Cross? That's got to be pretty fun.
Oh yeah, Dale's great. Yeah, I mean, Dale is such a easygoing guy, and there's a lot of things Dale can do. I mean, every Melvins fans have known for years about his skills, with behind the double kick and the thunder hitting and the and then his very wry sense of humor. He's a soft-spoken baritone. That's what I say. He's got a deep voice, and his humor is very very subtle. And then it's great in Red Cross, because there's another muscle he gets to flex. He gets to flex, sort of beat drumming and more 60s groovy, joyous stuff. And so that makes you want to dance. And he loves that stuff too. He doesn't, it, you know, and although the Melvins are very broad, people might want to just think of them as doing sludge or metal or, some kind of a mixture of those things. But ever since I've played with them, they've always taken a lot of pride in doing whatever they want to do. And if that means playing, any cover song they want to play of any genre, they'll give it a shot. And are they they love, there's no challenge that doesn't pique their whatever, their appetite to achieve more. But still, that said, whatever, Red Cross is just a different culture than the band, than the every band kind of has their own likes and dislikes cultures. And Dale is really great at what we do, and it's fun to watch him flex those muscles too. And yeah, it's a pleasure. And also on the last Red Cross tour, and the one we're going to be doing in the future. We just did the U.S. We did 6 weeks in the U.S. And Dale not only played in our band, he's really making it for lost time because he missed some tours. He missed recording with our band because he had a back surgery that took some healing. But he is back with a vengeance, and he has a new solo album. And while he was on tour with Red Cross playing drums, he also did an opening set where he did his songs acoustic. Well, he did a little DJing, so he warmed up for himself, and then he got on the acoustic guitar and wowed everybody with his sort of on the fact that he can do that too, you know. And yeah, it's great. And we're going to go do that in Europe in the fall also. So once again, it's Red Cross with Dale Crover, acoustic solo DJ, whatever, man of all, Renaissance man, wonder dude, opening the show.
Well, Steve has been extremely generous with his time because he's got to run off pretty soon to do another interview. So I appreciate Steve giving us pretty much a full hour. And I've got maybe one or two more questions for Steve, and then we'll let him go. The Red Cross UK tour kicks off on November 8th, runs through the UK, then hits
No, you
continental
had that
Europe.
October 8th.
October 8th, sorry. October 8th, and then runs through continental Europe, including Netherlands, which always a great place to see any band at. Then to Germany and Barcelona, all over, and then back to the UK. So all the way from the UK, all the way around continental Europe and back to the UK. So if you live on that side of the ocean, you definitely must go see Red Cross. They're awesome. And do you have any maybe closing question for Steve? I've got one or two more, and then we'll set them loose.
Well, I guess just off the tour thing, do you have like traditions that you do in certain cities? Like, oh, I'm going to the Netherlands. That means we always go here, or like we always get like this type of food.
Well, Red Cross we haven't done a headlining tour in Europe in many years, not since the 90s. We did do a
Oh, right.
support tour with the Melvins in 2017. And so this is a Melvins ritual here.
Okay.
And we're going to borrow it from them, but we're going to use the city of Bristol as our home base. And we land at Heathrow, and then you drive an hour and a half, not to London. You go the other way and you go to Bristol, and that's where you spend your first 2 days. And I really, really like that ritual because, as much as I like London, I'm usually too jet lagged to deal with it when I first get there. And then in Bristol, we have some friends that have like a rehearsal place where we can like try out our rented gear. And we just kind of get a little ritual. I know where the mall is there. I know where I can get the things I need to get. And so I like it. Bristol is my sort of headquarters in for the beginning of all UK European tours.
Nice.
Well, there you have
Yeah.
it. The new Red Cross record is out now. It's called Red Cross on In the Red Records. It's freaking awesome. I saw Red Cross at Punk Rock Bowling. They did an amazing. I mean, I don't know what the set's going to be in the UK, but at Punk Rock Bowling, they played a bunch of new stuff, a bunch of hits, and in the middle, they did all of the first EP all the way through. Which I don't know if that's something you guys usually do, or if that was a special thing or not. But
That
it
was
was
for Punk
awesome.
Rock Bowling. That was for Punk Rock Bowling. But we might do them. We kind of maybe encores. If you know the tunes, they call them out because we know them.
Well, it was totally rad. Plus, Steve's niece, Jeff's daughter, Astra, has a band called Side Eyes who opened, who were amazing. And Steve produced their last record, which took them from being a great band to being an amazing band. Or,
Oh,
well,
wow.
together. So it's like friggin' awesome. So the whole family is just whipping ass. Last question, Steve, and then we'll close this on up. What's something you're particularly proud about on the new record?
Yeah, Jesus. Just something in general. What
Yeah,
is something?
or I'll make it easy for you. What's something that you hope the listeners take from the new record?
Well, the thing I just keep saying about that, okay, I've mentioned this in an interview, and it's funny for what's that? You guys, is this punk news? Is that what it is?
PunkNews.org. Yes.
Yeah, so it's very funny that this is going to be my answer on punknews.org. I listened to an audio I really love audiobooks, and I listened to audio I listened to the autobiography of the actress Jane Fonda. last year sometime. And it was a book that she had written, I think, in her mid-60s. And she's now in her mid-80s. So I was like 20 years old. And she read it. I love listening to her voice. But she starts the book off about talking about how this was the beginning of what she called her third act. And she was using this theater and movie storytelling, metaphor. And I'm a little younger than she was then. I'm 57, but especially in rock terms, I really relate to this idea of the third act. And yes, this new record, by no means, even though it ends with a sort of roundup origin story song, Born Innocent, it's not the end of the story. I think it's the beginning of the next chapter. And I really hope that people kind of get that because we're kind of in uncharted territories now with rock and roll. I mean, like the Stones are out there in their 80s and musicians are now dying of natural causes. It's like we don't really know what we're allowed to do. It's like there's all these interviews of Mick Jagger in the 60s and 70s talking about he couldn't be singing Satisfaction when he was 35. And people are like, well, is it when's it too late to be doing this? When do you have to stop? And when is this mentality of rock and roll like, not dignified? And at what age? And I think, I would like to just see how far I could take this. And like I said, I'm a little bit of like an early starter, but maybe a late bloomer. And so for me, I'm hoping that this is the beginning of many more prolific moments. And I hope that the listener takes that away from the record. I hope that the listener is hungry for more. I hope that someone that might stumble into our documentary by the same name, Born Innocent, it's really kind of just like a primer for people who know nothing about our band. I hope that they stumble onto that. And then they go find this new record and they're like, oh, this is what they do. Okay. And it's not just stories about having done crazy things at 12 or having played with Sonic Youth in the 90s or, or whatever. It's like, oh, these are interesting artists in their own right. And then have something interesting to say about rock and roll, being a rock and roll musician at any age. And, that's what I hope people take from this record, that they're hungry for more and they're on board for the third act.
Well said, Steve. Thanks again for coming on. The new record's great, Red Cross, the album by Red Cross on In the Red Records. We're going to close out with an early Red Cross song, but then I'm going to sneak in another Red Cross song, the song that took me from being a Red Cross fan to being a Red Cross maniac. So we're going to play Linda Blair, the big Red Cross early well-known song, and then we're going to play Party Underground off Beyond the Door, which is one of my favorite Red Cross tunes. And it's the song that made me go from being a fan to a mega fan. So, Steve, thanks again. And thanks again, man. Best of luck to you. This has been a lot of fun.
That was so much fun. Thank you, guys.